Mr. Watkins, Reel 5. We're talking about when you were recalled from sick leave,
yeah.
and you were put on draft rather than sent back to your to Lansing to continue your officer's training.
Yes, well,
now, what exactly happened then? So,
well, I couldn't understand it, of course, but I was a young lad, and you were always taught to follow the last order. And the last order I had was a telegram in my hand telling me to report back to Chapman Barracks to join this draft, I think it was DU-26. And so I duly did that, and the chap in charge of the draft was sympathetic, but said there was nothing to do about it at the moment, and to get on to my captain as soon as I joined the ship. And I left it at that, thinking that I would be joining a ship in a British port. But the next thing I knew, we were on our way to the States to pick up this HMS Titanic at Boston.
Now, what do you remember of the voyage out? What ship did you go on?
Oh, it was a troop ship. I don't remember the name.
It's okay. And what was it like on the way?
Oh, quite an ordinary voyage. We fortunately didn't get any U-boats or anything on the convoy. And we got there, went into New York, and joined HMS Saker.
And what happened at HMS Saker? Now, what was HMS Saker? If you could just explain.
It was a shore base outside New York.
Was this in Asbury Park? Or?
I don't remember what it was called now. We were just taken there in the back of a lorry, and we were there. But within a week, we were bussed out to Boston, and joined HMS Titanic.
Now, would this be about January or February 44?
It was about January 44, yes. And we sailed back to Northern Ireland, Lissahannan.
What were your first impressions of HMS Retallick?
Well, I was very pleased indeed. After the atrocious conditions on HMS London, it was like a little palace to me. Beautifully clean, all electric galley, and bunks to sleep in, and it was a clean and comfortable ship.
Could you give us an idea of the layout of the mess decks, or you know what sort of you had?
Yes, well, mainly there was an after mess deck that took seamen and stokers, and then the forward mess deck, which I think was mainly seamen, and there was no connecting below the decks that was chopped off with the engine room. So you had to go up onto the, more or less, the upper deck to pass from forward to aft and vice versa.
And what was the mess deck like? What did you have on it? What was the arrangement?
Well, it was mainly just a little bit of floor space with bunks set out in rows. And under the bunks there were big, sort of 2 foot square metal lockers to keep all your gear in.
Did the bunks fold away? Or?
Yes, the bunks hooked up, so that it was all flat, so there was plenty of space. You could sit on the lockers, you see, when the bunks were hoisted up, you could sit on the lockers underneath.
And did you prefer the bunks to hammock or?
I don't think there was much difference. On the whole, I found hammocks very comfortable things to sleep. But the bunks were very handy. You didn't have to sling your hammock every night and lash it up every morning, which you did on the London, of course. You just sort of got out your bunk and hoisted it up, and it was done. And the lashing across to keep the mattress in.
And
they were quite comfortable.
What about it had American facilities on it?
There was a central canteen, so you didn't have to do any preparation or anything. You know, there were special cook ratings on board, and they provided the food at the appropriate times each day.
And did you have to would each individual go and fetch it, or was it brought back?
No, you ate in the cafeteria. There was a proper cafeteria, it was called cafeteria messing. And there was room for, I think they had to have a couple of sittings. There wasn't room for everyone in there at the same time. But you had the pressed out stainless steel trays, and the food was served up on those, and you ate from a tray, knife and fork and a tray.
Cool. What did you think of the system?
I thought it was very good indeed, because they had a washing dishwasher thing on board. When you finished, you put your tray in a rack, and the racks would fill up eventually and put in this machine, and they were automatically washed. So it was very hygienic and very good. It worked very well.
And what was the food like? Was it American style rations at the start? Or
at the start, perhaps it was, yes. We had quite a lot of fruit juice on board that was American. That was very nice, but yeah, it was adequate and always filling. So I enjoyed it very much.
And what about some other American things? There's supposed to be water coolers. I mean, were you aware of them?
Yeah, there was a water cooler. I don't know whether it kept going all through the war, but yeah, it was very nice to be able to have a mouthful of, you know, cold water when you felt like it. The cup supply, right? That was a bit of a disaster. They had ordinary cups without handles. There was a little mug, handleless mugs. And we got in a storm one day, and most of them were broken. So after that, most of us had to invest in an enamel mug or something that was unbreakable.
And there was a laundry as well, which is very rare on a British ship.
Well, there was a laundry on the London, but I didn't use it a lot because I remember on the London I put my long woolen underpants in one day and they came out half a size after being boiled. That was a bit of a disaster. But mainly on the Retallick, we did our own washing in a bucket on the upper deck when the weather was fine. Just a bit of naval soap and a bit of hand rubbing.
Was that an efficient way of doing it? Or what
it, could you? It kept your underwear and your socks clean. And the overalls, I'm not so sure there was a laundry on the Retallick. Was it?
It was on most of them. I don't know particularly on them.
I'm not sure there was. I'm trying to run my mind around the ship's makeup. And I don't think there was a laundry on board. We mainly did our own washing.
And there
was facilities to hang it out. You know, there was a sort of a space where you would hang overalls after you wash them and leave them in a warm atmosphere to dry off.
Now, what did you think of the construction of the ship? Because it was unusual in say it had a through deck, but the other thing was it was all welded.
It was all welded. Yeah. Well, we wondered about that at the start. Now, I don't know whether naval historians have worked out whether welding is as good as rivets. I'm sure. But,
Did it worry you at all?
No, we didn't really think about it. It was a ship, and you hope to goodness it was strong enough to do all the things it wanted to do.
Now, you joined there around about January or February 1944.
Yeah.
Were you there for the commissioning ceremony, or do you remember anything about that?
It was commissioned. There was a small ceremony in Boston before we left. I don't remember much about it, Canada, I don't know.
Now, did you do any working up trials outside Boston? No,
I think possibly that had been done before we boarded her. There must have been shipmakers' trials or something out there. But the first trials we done were when we got to Tobermory.
Right, I'll come back. What about while you were in Boston, what sort of reception did you have from the local American?
Oh, they were very friendly indeed. Very friendly, yes.
In what way?
Well, they invite you to their homes. Not that I ever managed to get there. We weren't on board long enough to do that. I'm not sure whether we were just one draft or whether there were people on board before.
And you weren't in the barracks? It all happened to you?
No, we were in safer barracks, but then we were bussed straight on board and that was it. And we left within a few days to come back to England.
But overall, the Americans were friendly.
Yeah. Oh, yes, very friendly indeed. Yes.
Now, what about the voyage back to the UK? What do you remember of that?
Well, I can remember it was reasonably rough, but not too rough. We got over it. I'm comparing it with when, after the war, we took the ship back to America, which was very rough indeed. But we seem to get away with it on the voyage over. It doesn't seem bad at all.
And what about the rolling? That would be when you were first exposed to... I mean, they're supposed to have had a bad rolling, and...
Well, they did, yes, they did. In fact, our ERA fixed up what he used to call a wobble-o-meter. It was a heavy weight in the engineer's flat that acted like a pendulum and had a degree thing to see how many degrees the ship was rolling. Which is a bit frightening at times when it went to 45. But
did it make you seasick?
I think they stood up very well. They were quite well made ships, I think.
Did it make you seasick, the rolling?
Yes. It took a few days to get over that. I don't remember a lot. I remember being, you know, quite pleased to get back to Norwood Island and start working up trials.
Now, what was you, on the voyage back, what was your job on the ship, if you see what I mean? You'd been posted there.
I'd been posted there. Well, almost from the start, I was working with the gunnery officer. And
what as? What, did you have a title? Or?
I don't know, I'm sure. We found in the ship, after we'd set sail, we found a rather complicated mechanical computer, which was supposed to aid the setting of the guns, but we played with it for a day and realised it was far too complicated and we'd never had time to use it. So we put that back in its box and put it in a corner, and what happened later on when we were in action was the gunnery officer would be on the bridge beside me and he'd have a binnacle and sighted binoculars and he'd fire star shell and he'd pick out a target and pass the range and he's guess deflection, and I'd set it on dials. I had a little square box in front of me with dials for range and deflection, and they were repeated down to the guns. The gun loader and trainer had repeat things in front of them that showed what they had to follow to before the open fire signal came. But even that system was all right occasionally, but very often we're in such close contact when we did go into action that after we'd fired star shell, the gunnery officer, unless he had something big in his sights, would usually just say all guns fire independently, and they could see in the star shell their targets and they'd fire until the ceasefire button went.
We'll obviously be coming back. So that's what other jobs would you have on the ship? Because you wouldn't be on the bridge with the gunnery officer.
No, not all the time. No, well, for a time I was sort of odd job man. I was navigating German for a while.
What did that entail?
Well, that just entailed looking after all the charts, and you know, he'd ask me what charts he wanted, and I'd get them out of a rack and lay them on the table for him.
Did you have to set the clocks as well?
I can't remember that. I can remember winding one on the in the chart house. Yeah, that had to be wound once a week. I don't think we had any more. There was another clock in the wheelhouse. I can't remember anymore. I suppose there must have been probably one in the wardroom, but I didn't wind that.
Anything else as navigators, yeoman?
Well, we had to work ship, of course, sometimes. What else did I do?
What's working ship? So you just explain it for them.
Well, working, if you were in harbour, of course, there was always paintwork to be done, and everybody had to muck into doing that. Chipping old rust.
We'll come to that, because I know that painting is quite a big thing on the rest of it. Anything else you had to do? We'll look at the watch system and things later when we're into the thing. You got back, and where were you heading back to?
We went back to Northern Ireland straight away. We went up into Lissahally on the Larne River near Londonderry.
And what happened when you got there?
Well, we were there for a couple of days, and then the rest of the ship's company joined us, and most of whom.
So how many had been on the ship when you came back?
Virtually escaping for, I don't know, 50 of us, I suppose, perhaps.
Because in the book it says something about it was brought across by Canadians.
That's right.
Were the Canadians on board? Or was this a mistake in the book?
No, there were Canadians. There were a skeleton crew of Canadians on board as well.
So it was sort of a mixed crew?
Yeah, it was a mixed crew, and they presumably were taken back because they left the ship as soon as we got to the Sahara.
And what about the drafts, the crew as it built up? What were your first impressions of the crew? How did you get on?
Well, the rest of the crew, when they came aboard, had never been to sea before. So they were all right. It was a mixed crew all over England. There were Geordies and Scousers and Scottish lads on board, and Londoners, of course, and West Country. They came from all over. It was a very mixed crew. But...
And how did you settle down with them in your mess?
Oh, very well, very well. Trying to wind my mic. we all had our little jobs to do, you know, but certainly keeping the ship clean as well. I remember the mess decks were always scrubbed out every morning.
What was the procedure for that? How would you go about cleaning the ship?
Well, you'd fall in and be allocated jobs around the ship, you know, and mess deck cleaners were allocated. They used to volunteer for that, I think, mess deck cleaners. They, you know, you'd fall in and then there'd be mess deck cleaners fall out and they'd go and start scrubbing their messes. Others would be allocated painting jobs and or rigging or any repairs that needed to be done. And there were motorboat crews if you were in harbour. There were, if you're in harbour, there were watchkeepers, of course, on the gangway. You'd have a quartermaster and a bosun's mate on the gangway at all times in harbour. I did a bit of everything. I was quartermaster a while on the gangway. I was boat's crew in Portsmouth for a while. I used to drive the trot boat in to take the Liberty Man ashore into Portsmouth.
Okay, so what about the working up trials? Now, well, that was done at Tobermory, wasn't it?
Yes, we went from Lissahalli and Captain Lieutenant Brownlee. We'd been out for a few speed trials out in the Irish Sea, and when we came back upriver one day, he tried to turn the boat round. And whether the tide was out, I don't know, but he damaged one of the propellers. And so eventually, about a week later, we had to go into Glasgow. Dry docking in Glasgow to have the propeller repaired. And I think it was while we were in Glasgow there that they fitted the bow pom-pom. And I don't know whether the Hedgehog, the anti-submarine bombs, were fitted then or later, can't recall. But anyway, we had a week or two in dry dock at Glasgow before we went back down the river past Greenock and went to Tobermory to do our working up trials there.
Now, what were the working up trials like?
Well, they were very rigorous, actually. There was an old admiral or vice admiral or something in charge of Tobermory, and he used to try and keep everybody on their toes. He used to send messages to the ships in the middle of the night just to see if everyone was awake. And we used to go out most days doing anti-submarine trials, trying to get pings from submarines. There's a couple of submarines there, you know, working with us in trials. And we'd pick their echoes up on the ASDICs. And then we had gunnery trials, of course. We'd get a target ship towing a target, and we'd fire at that. And it went on like that, really, day in, day out, for probably a month, I'm not so sure. But we might well have been in Tobermory for a month.
Now, what did you think of the armament of the ship? I mean, what about the 3-inch guns? What did you think of that? Well, you'd been used to 8-inch, was it?
Yes. Well, the 3-inch were, well, I used to call them pea shooters, because most British ships of that sort of class, destroyer class, had twin 4-inch. And if they fired together, of course, you've got a vastly greater amount of explosive going into your target than one 3-inch shell. They're only single guns, they're not twins. And I don't know how much damage they would do, really, a 3-inch shell against 3-4-inch, but obviously we felt we were a little bit under-armoured. But it was probably sufficient against the targets that we were expecting to come up against, mainly E-boats.
What about the depth charges?
Yeah, I don't know how many we carried, but there were certainly two racks, and as many odd places they were lashed around the quarterdeck, in case we did use up a lot of ones. And yes, we practiced firing those on Y guns. There were two, well, there were two or four Y guns, I can't remember now, to fire them in the air, or otherwise you had two racks to drop them over the stern. And we were always very apprehensive that they were set at safe when we went to sea, just in case anything went adrift. And you don't want a ship going down with the depth charges not set at safe. That's one of the main jobs of the chappie in charge of the quarterdeck.
And what about the hedgehog? Can you explain what that was?
Yeah, the hedgehog was set, I believe it was just above a B gun, and there was a metal platform welded to the ship with, I don't know, 16 or 24 bombs on it that fired forward. You could just elevate it a little bit, a few degrees up and down and side to side. And the idea was that you fired them and immediately turned off at a fair speed, because if you fire them into a strong headwind, they come down on your own forecastle. So, yes, we used them. I don't know how effective they were, I'm sure. But they were very spectacular when you fired a string of bombs off. I was ill one day, and the trouble with them was invariably one or more would misfire and still be on the rack after all the rest had gone. And I can remember Mr. Brownrigg losing his temper a bit once and climbed over the side when the ERA was trying to find the fault in the circuitry to set this bomb off, and he said, "For goodness sake, come on, we've got to, we're chasing a submarine here," and he kicked the thing and it shot off and missed his nose by a couple of inches.
Now what about other weapons, the Oerlikons?
The Oerlikons, now how many Oerlikons did we have? Goodness me. Probably at least eight, if not more. They were on the sort of upper superstructure just behind Y gun.
What were they like as a weapon? And did you ever get the chance to fire them, or would that not be your...
I didn't. It wasn't my lead. But I could have done. I'd watched them fire often enough, and it was just a case of getting yourself in a harness and pulling the trigger once they were loaded in a metal canister holding, I don't know, 60 or 70 rounds. And when that had been used up, you just whip the canister off and put another one on.
Were they effective?
They were quite effective against aircraft, yes.
Anything else?
Well, against E-boats as well, because they were able to put up a pretty good wall of tracer. Most of the tracer we used came away for the first 60 or 70 feet without showing where it came from, you know. In other words, the tracer didn't start until it was some distance away from the ship. So anybody watching it fire couldn't pinpoint where the fire was coming from.
Any other weaponry?
You
have pom-poms? I can't remember.
We had a bow pom-pom, yes.
And what was that for?
Well, anti-E-boat, mainly, because they were right there. They could see, as soon as you fired star shell, they were in the prime position to have the first go at it. It was a dangerous sort of position, though, because we had to have a metal rail welded in front of A gun to make sure A gun didn't fire straight ahead and hit the crew of the pop pop.
Now, so you were doing the working up trials went on for about a month.
Yes.
And then what?
And then we came straight down the RSC and went straight to Portsmouth. when a couple of days we were starting our patrols, going out with 6 MTBs every night, doing patrols off the coast of France.
And that was based at Portsmouth?
That was based at Portsmouth.
Could you explain, because this is quite an unusual thing, what the idea was? You were going out as a frigate, or destroyer, in effect, with...
Usually six MTBs, and we'd patrol up and down the coast about 5 miles off the French coast, doing these patrols up and down every night.
And what exactly were you looking for?
Well, reports of any enemy movement, enemy convoys. There was one case of Germans trying to break out of Le Havre, and we had quite a pitched battle for a couple of days with convoys moving from in and out of Le Havre.
Was that after D-Day or before?
That was after D-Day. After D-Day, yeah.
Best try and keep it in order. Mm. What's the first thing? Do you remember your first early patrols?
Well, it was our very, very first patrol was when we chased a ping we had on the radar screen. And we chased it for 10 minutes with 5 star shells and found it was a rogue barrage balloon floating above the water, about 10 foot above the water, trailing rope from the water. And we all got keyed up and found our target was a barrage balloon. So we duly sunk it. Had a laugh about it afterwards. But no, it was mainly we used to go out patrolling. Most days, very often, we'd stay out for 2 or 3 days.
What time would you go out? So, take me through a typical patrol.
Well, it depends on the time of the year, but it would be just late afternoon, just as it was getting dark. And sometimes we'd have the MTBs, we'd pick up the MTBs. I think they were based further along the coast from Portsmouth. And we usually pick them up as soon as we got past Nab Tower, which was the navigational tower off of Portsmouth. And the MTBs would come along and join us as soon as we got there. And we'd sail across the channel together and start our patrol line.
What happened to the patrol line?
Well, sometimes we get an ASDIC ping, sometimes we get radar pings for e-boats in the area. And we had many a pitched battle with e-boats and sometimes German destroyers if they were guarding a convoy.
Now, do you remember any of the occasions in detail?
Well, I can remember the appalling, choking cordite smoke that used to hang around the ship after you'd been bashing off a few rounds for 10 minutes. And I can remember one night we was out with the cottage. Oh, Cossie something. I can't remember the name of the ship now, it's terrible, isn't it? But I think it's mentioned in Donald's book, and I think the captain got killed on that particular night, the captain of the Cossie got.
What exactly happened as far as you recall?
Well, it was pretty well turmoil, you know, when you're in action, it's very difficult to tell what's happening. In fact, I used to have a great deal of admiration for the way the captain kept his cool and conned the ship and got us in and out of these attacks we went in, because for us it was turmoil, you know, there was lots of noise, lots of cordite smoke and lots of tracer flying around your head. And
what would you be doing? You'd be doing this job,
well,
would you?
I'd be on the communications with all the guns, yes, the gunnery officer was on his binnacle and I'd be beside him, talking to the guns, giving them orders that the gunnery officer gave me to pass on. And if they, you know, after the action had broken off, I had the fire button and the ceasefire button under my feet. And I used to use those at appropriate moments when I was told to. But nothing is simple in action. You're just in a mess, you know. you realise sometimes that however good your plans are, once you get into action, it's pot luck. You know, whether you come out of it well or you come out of it badly, it's turmoil. It really is turmoil. I recall one attack we went in and we had the La Combatante with us, which was an old Hunt-class destroyer that had been handed over to the French, Free French. And they were rogue elephants. They used to fire at anything they saw. And on two occasions, our own NTDs were complaining that they were being fired upon by La Combatante. And that was not very good, of course.